Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
What is music therapy? What is it used to treat? And what goes on during a music therapy session? We'll answer all of these questions and more on this edition of Getting Schooled. I'm Abby Hornacek. We all listen to music for different reasons. You might be going to work, you need a little pick-me-up, you're listening to 9 to 5 by Dolly Parton, you might be getting ready to go to the gym, I don't know what gets you pumped up, but maybe it's heavy metal, that's not my vibe, but maybe it's yours. But we can all agree that music really does affect how we perform, how we think, and our emotions. When you think of therapy, you might be picturing someone laying on a nice chair, talking to a therapist who's writing down notes. But there is a world where those two things can come together, and that's where you get music therapy. Just like its name suggests, music therapy utilizes things like rhythms, sounds, and tunes to help relieve patients' conditions and overall improve their lives. So how does one become a music therapist? How do you know if music therapy is right for you? And what does the future of music therapy look like? Well, here to explain all of this and more is music therapist and founder of Oak Song Music Therapy, Amy Standridge. And Amy is kind enough to join me now. Amy, what's going on?
Nothing much. We're having some nice weather here in San Antonio, so it's nice to be a San Antonian, today.
Texas is the best. I mean, we're talking about music therapy, but there are natural sights and sounds as well in Texas that make me happy. So I can just sit outside and listen all day long.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Well, I'm glad that you're joining me now. I love this topic. We were kind of chatting before we started recording, and I have been obsessed with the idea of music therapy for such a long time, just because our brain reacts to different stimuli in a bunch of different ways. But I want to know how music affects the brain, because that's your expertise. You've been doing this for almost 25 years. So let's just start actually with, how did you get into music therapy?
Yeah. So let's see. I was about 24 years old. I was working in a nightclub in Charleston, South Carolina, and working in a radio chemistry laboratory as an administrative assistant, kind of just trying to find out what I wanted to be when I grew up. I still don't really know, by the way. My mom actually read about music therapy in a book and told me about it. She knew that I wasn't happy doing what I was doing. It's fun to work in a nightclub, but, you know, I didn't really want to do that when I was my age now. So I happened to have a music therapy program in that city where I lived, in Charleston, South Carolina. So I started courses right away and I was hooked. It made sense to me and I never looked back.
Well, I guess working in a nightclub, it kind of translates, because there's music all the time in nightclubs.
That's true.
So you might have noticed how that was affecting how you felt, maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe.
Well, that's such an interesting story. I love that. And now, you know, you've still been doing it. And what, I guess, is music therapy for people who don't know, mm-hmm. or, you know, you can kind of assume what it is, but more scientifically, what does it do?
Well, before I launch into the definition, I should have mentioned that I was a musician already. So music therapists do have a background in music, and that's part of the degree. You need to be able to be a functional musician on whatever your instrument. So music therapy began in the 1950s. I mean, music has always been therapeutic, but in the 1950s, they found that veterans from World War II in the hospital would heal faster and be discharged faster if they had access to music in the hospital. And so that seemed like a great thing to investigate further. And so that's when music therapy as a field really started. The American Music Therapy Association is our national association. And the definition of music therapy is a clinical and evidence-based use of music interventions to address individualized goals and objectives within a therapeutic relationship by a credentialed professional. It's very wordy.
Wow.
But
I need music therapy just to help me remember that definition.
I know. So the bottom line, it is research-based. There's a lot of wonderful research about the effects of music on the brain and human behavior. It is an established allied profession. You do have to be a qualified professional. And we do address goals and objectives. Where a music entertainer or a musician might go and perform, our goals and objectives are to involve our clients in the music making. We're going to be working on whatever goals and objectives we have set for them, whether it's communication or social interaction or memory or physical rehabilitation. I work primarily with people living with dementia and their care partners. And so the kinds of goals that we're working on are different than you would work on with a small child. But we do address individualized. We find that out in an assessment. So it's
I'm glad that you bring this up, because that is what intrigued me from the beginning, because, you know, music, it causes all type of emotions, nostalgia, happiness, sadness, excitement. But then there's another aspect of music that can actually target different parts of your brain, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So will you break that down for me a little bit more? Maybe when it comes to your dementia patients, if you have someone who might have had a stroke, mm-hmm. how do you use music to help people like that?
Well, the beautiful thing about music is that it's a whole brain activity. So it doesn't just focus on one area of your brain, where speech might focus in one area. Music is interconnected. And of course, speech is not that simple. I'm making that sound too simple. But music is both auditory. It's visual. If you're at a concert if it brings up memories and images in your mind, you're visualizing that, which is a different area of your brain. Meaning in music. Emotion in music, that's a limbic system, and movement in music, rhythm in particular, is processed very basically in the brainstem. So music can help with gait rehabilitation or physical rehabilitation, like in the case of a stroke or a traumatic brain injury, like you mentioned. And on top of all that is it's fun. It's very supported scientifically, but it doesn't feel like science when you're doing. I mean, the arts and sciences are very intricately combined, but so it's fun. And I think that's important too, because I like to have fun.
Me too. Yeah. It sounds like it's fun to be able to go to this kind of therapy, because you go to like occupational therapy, maybe rehab, that those things all take a kind of not pain, but you know, it's tough. And I'm sure music therapy is as well, but it's also, I'm sure, very therapeutic to your patients who are experiencing those different sounds and feeling those emotions.
Especially in my work with people with dementia, that music is something that lasts into your brain and your memory. Your very cells remember, because it's encoded emotionally. If you think about happy birthday, you know, you heard that when you were a young child. And if you like birthdays, which I do, that might bring back great memories for you, or your song from your wedding, or your song that you used to jam to on your way to work when you were working. Let's say you're retired, or you've been forced to leave your job because of dementia. And it's humanizing in that way too, because you can still access it. It's still relatable. And so that's one of the reasons why in my population, it's very, very salient, very effective, and very comforting too. Dementia is hard.
I can't even imagine. Hey. So how do you know what kind of music then to use when you're in different situations with your patients?
Yeah. Well, one, I never use anything that somebody doesn't like. That does not benefit.
So no heavy metal for people who love country music.
That's right. Unless they want to. I had a particular client once. This was a long time ago. He was a younger man with a traumatic brain injury, and he was relaxed to Metallica. And I'm like,
oh my gosh.
Okay. I mean, I could relate in a little bit. I sort of like that kind of music from my college days. So it just depends on what the person is interested in. Like you said, I mean, some people are especially, have especially strong memories of hymns and sacred music. Some people from different cultures have great memories from their own cultural music, which is another great reason to use music, because it can bridge cultures if you learn it effectively. Typically when people, the research shows that the kind of music you really enjoy is the music that you listen to when you are between the ages of 10 and 30.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
No way.
That's what it says.
I'm trying to remember what I listened to.
I know. And but that's not really true with me, because I was 10 and 80. So I've got, 80s music, which, fine, and 90s music. I love 70s music. Yeah, that's probably my favorite kind of music. But
that's interesting. I feel like, 10 to 30, that's a long time. And then you evolve. I think when I was 10, I'm a little bit odd. I listened to big band music growing up. I love big band music. Yeah. I also loved Earth, Wind & Fire. I loved, but then now country has been my entire life. So love country music. So I'm thinking about what would make me feel certain ways.
Yeah.
Do you always pick songs that or music that makes people feel comforted? I mean, what is the game plan when someone comes to you and says, "Hey, I'm struggling with this. What can we do?"
Well, it depends on the goals that you're working on. So if you're working on, let's say somebody has some depression going on, happens in older adults as well as younger people, but you might be working on goals such as increase positive cognition, like increase positive memory recall. And in that situation, you wouldn't choose a piece of music that was very incongruent with that person's current experience. So for example, when I'm working with somebody who's a little bit agitated and maybe they're scowling a little bit and frowning, and I can tell they're nervous or upset, I'm not going to start by playing an upbeat, happy, polka tune, because it's going to make them mad. Mm-hmm. I think I wouldn't want that. So what I would do is I would start with kind of where they were. If they were anxious, I might play some music was that maybe in a minor mode or maybe with a lot of dissonance and tension. And then gradually shift that music towards the desired mood. So that's one example of how you might shift and use different kinds of music.
That's interesting. I want to just interrupt you really quickly, if I may, because it reminded me of something. I walked in on one of my friends once and she was having a hard time and she was listening to really sad music. And I was like, hey, you got to turn this off because you're crying listening to this music and it's just playing into your mood. But you're saying that could actually be therapeutic.
Yes.
Well,
because you're hurt.
Apologize to that friend.
Yeah.
I was like,
sorry.
Hey, we got to flip the switch.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And music can also be harmful. It can be triggering, so you need to be careful as a music therapist. If you introduce a song that maybe makes someone very emotional, Amazing Grace is one of those that's often played at funerals. People really love it and request it, but there's always, just frequently, somebody in your group who starts to cry. And you need to be able to comfort them, listen to them, reflect to them what they're feeling. Oh, you're fine. You would never just poo-poo somebody's emotion. Right. I'm trying to think of a different word, but that's what I came up with. Poo-poo.
Poo-poo is a good word. I think that's the dictionary, right?
Yeah. Or shame. You might feel ashamed if it's a happy song and they're not feeling happy. They might feel, isolated or excluded or like they can't share. And so
how do you know that though? I mean, if you're in a session with someone, let's say you're treating depression and you play a song that maybe it reminds them of happy times when they were in high school. Mm-hmm. And you see that, do you look for their kind of how they react physically? I mean, how do you assess that? Because someone might be like, oh, wow, that brings me back to a really happy time. But then you're reminded that you're in this time that you're no longer in that happy mood. So it might kind of have the adverse reaction.
Yes. Sometimes if your client is verbal, they'll tell you and you can shift the energy or you can let's talk about it. Music accesses emotions in a way that language doesn't always, but we still have access in many situations to that kind of language where you could process that. What does that bring up for you? How does that make you feel? What could you have done? If there's some regret, what could you have done differently? What might you do differently next time? Or validating that music can bring back both happy and sad memories at the same time. How does that look? In the case of somebody with dementia in the later stages, you can tell by maybe facial expression, frowning, or eyes open if they really are relating to what you're singing. So you gauge it through body language, you gauge it through spoken language, and then you move on from there as best you can according to their goals and objectives. So if the objective is to come up with more positive cognitions about your life, you know, that might be a way to access those.
All right, we've got to step aside for a quick recess, but we'll be back right after this.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Again, I have no backing in any neuroscience at all, but I love to learn about kind of the neurological connections that our brain is constantly making. And I'm curious about how music plays a role in that. I mean, what happens to somebody's brain when you play a song?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things is, like I mentioned before, that since music is a whole brain activity, all sorts of, if you were had somebody in a PET scan, you see all sorts of different colors, areas of their brain that have been stimulated, and different brain imaging tests. I should have brushed up on those. I'm not a neurosurgeon, although I am fascinated by neuroscience. But you would see all sorts of different levels of activation. And you might see activation in areas where you might not consider. So for example, let's say you played a piece of classical music to someone who had been in the past or was a classical pianist. They're going to have different brain activation than somebody that just listens to classical music socially, because they're going to have all sorts of other associations with it. They're going to have the visual. They're going to maybe see the music in front of them. They're going to remember how it felt to perform it. You know, it can be very complicated. So it really just depends on the person's experience with that music in other times in their lifetime.
You mentioned anxiety, depression, dementia. What kind of other things is music therapy used to treat?
Yeah, well, premature infants. We'll start at the beginning. Premature infants. There's NICU music therapy that specializes at the Florida State University. Has done a lot of research on that. And it can improve sucking reflex in newborns who need to eat more. It can increase pulse oxygenation, oxygen levels, if you need that. Of course, you need to be careful with newborns and preemies, because their ears are small and you can't be loud. So you have to be aware of those kinds of things. Preschoolers, maybe, who are working on social skills, maybe a school-age child with Down syndrome or autism who's working on self-regulation and understanding themselves better, sharing with others. You could find somebody who had going upwards, a teenager who was experiencing depression, like we mentioned, traumatic brain injury, say that you're in your 20s, schizophrenia, all sorts of different kinds of depression, mental health issues, substance abuse. And I mean, it's really, the sky is the limit. I just came from a drumming training that was really amazing, and lots of different population groups, demographical groups that people were working with from birth to grave. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so wide ranging, and the types of things you can target with music therapy is just, it's a beautiful thing. I'm curious, you bring up newborns and maybe, babies. We can really target their brains in different ways too, because I can imagine it's their brains are still so malleable. I mean, you're creating a human being. So for someone who has yet to experience life and hear music for the first time, what kind of songs do you target or do you use to target their brain? Because they don't have any memories of, I loved 80s music or something like that.
I hope not. So, well, one of the things is babies in the womb, they hear the music their mom's listening to, their parents are listening to, their loved ones are listening to. I know my daughter, I had a music therapy client who was school age, and she loved the song Polly Wally Doodle. So we sang Polly Wally Doodle a lot. And when my daughter was, a baby, maybe not a brand new 2-day-old newborn, but when she was, 8 months, 12 months, when she would hear that song, she would start to kick and move her arms more. I mean, I don't know. I wasn't in her brain. I didn't have access to MRI, but
wow.
But I think it's because she was exposed to it.
At least the mom wasn't listening to like Cardi B or something.
That yeah, right. Be. Well, no, I wasn't. But yeah, so, and then also we're born with so many more neural connections than we have now, not because we're getting older, but because the brain prunes some of those out because you don't need all of those. And so a newborn brain is going to have a lot more, it's more of a, not a blank slate, but it has more, less patterns of behavior and listening and life experience. Mm. When we don't use those neurons as we grow up, we don't need them anymore. And so they die or they're replaced with a new connection.
Can the type of music that you listen to as a kid, can that affect how you deal with different problems as an adult?
Oh, that's a great question. I guess it depends on the person. I'm sure it could, you know.
I don't know if this is a myth, but I remember when I was younger, there was this whole thing that if you had a younger kid with a developing brain, if you played Mozart to them as they were falling asleep, they were more likely to be intelligent or something like that. I don't know. That was just something that I was told, but.
Well, yeah, it is. Yes.
Does it work?
I mean, yes, no, not really. I mean, I don't think the science behind it really proved that. And again, you know, since I work with much older people, I don't have my finger on the pulse of all of that information right now. But yes, that is something that people have said. It's called the Mozart effect. Yes. But, you know, we don't know whether, you know, it was very specific. I believe that research, it was listening to Mozart, I think improved your visual spatial skills. I don't think it was an all-encompassing made you smarter. I think it improved your visual spatial skills, did I say that right?
Well, that just shows how influential music can be.
Absolutely.
Are there different types of music therapy?
Yes, for sure.
What are they?
So one would be considered improvisational music therapy, where you use a lot of instrumental music back and forth. Music therapists most always involve the client or the patient or the student, whatever you call them, in active music making. Otherwise, it's just in music listening is an important part of that. But we're engaging other people in listening and participating in music. So some music therapists take a very improvisational approach with less words and more music. Some are more behavioral, causal. You know, if you do A, you get B. And how do we make those connections? Neurologic music therapy is a specific field of music therapy called NMT, neurologic music therapy. I had my master's degree in music therapy from Colorado State University, and that is their method that they're really passionate about. And I use some of that as well. I'm more eclectic, and some other therapists are, because not everybody responds to the same. It depends on your client base. And I'm sure I'm leaving something out, humanistic, music-centered, person-centered. Yes, there are tons of different kinds of different approaches, let's say. Mm-hmm. It's all music therapy, different approaches.
When you talk about creating music for a specific person, a client, whoever it may be, or maybe it's for a broad range of people, do you think about the kind of notes or like, I know there are binaural beats and different sounds and is that how you create the music that is going to target these different issues?
Sometimes, yes. I mean, we don't use recorded music, but you're onto something. You're very intuitive, Abby.
I don't know about that. Yeah,
in NMT, neurologic music therapy, like I mentioned, there's something called pattern sensory enhancement. And what that just means is that melody, harmony, timbre, rhythm can shape movement and behavior. So for example, if you're encouraging somebody, let's say somebody is recovering from a stroke or a brain injury and they're learning to go up the steps, you're not going to play along a descending melody as they're ascending the steps. Oh. You're going to reflect the movement in the melody or the rhythm. So in rhythmic auditory stimulation for gait rehabilitation, you use the rhythm, you match the person's cadence. That's very, very powerful in Parkinson's disease. And stroke and traumatic brain injury can help with gait, because walking is a very rhythmic behavior. And so rhythm is one thing that you would really use to shape that behavior, because you're not going to play something fast when their gait is slow. Mm-hmm. And even things like, so for example, one of the things that I do in my work is I have a choir for people living with dementia and their care partners. And we're a performing choir now that we're back together in person from COVID. So we recently wrote a song together, and one of our care partners wrote the lyrics to a song, and we put that in music. Well, some of the words in the poem that he wrote are river and flow. And so those kinds of words you would put a flowy melody to. You know, you wouldn't say it flows and that's staccato, because flowing is not staccato. Flowing is legato. You might go, you know, it flows. You know, that's a more of a picture of what flowing looks like. So you might use all of those different elements. Dissonance, when music sounds, I don't want to say painful, but very dissonant, very in disagreement with the notes are in disagreement with one another, that can kind of bring tension, and consonance or harmony will relieve that tension because it's more of an open texture. So you're right. There's so many different aspects of music that we would use.
With something like a river, do you use that for people? I mean, when I think about water, I think about nature, I think about just floating down a river, and it's more tranquil of a feeling for me when I hear something like that. So is that what you think about when you use these different elements of maybe nature, birds chirping, things like that?
Absolutely. Yes.
Wow. So that's incredible.
Yeah. You mentioned you enjoy classical music. There's something called program music, where notes and melodies and harmonies. Well, actually, this is more than just, this went back into, you know, program music. I believe, if I remember from my music history, it's sort of more of a romantic music, where classical is very much more, a little bit more structured. But you might hear, you know, a flute to symbolize a bird flying, or there's a piece that I love called the Moldau from Bedřich Smetana. And it starts out as a river, and it's very flowy, the music. And as the song progresses, sometimes it becomes louder. Sometimes there's a dance beat behind it. It symbolizes like a riverside, you know, dance party or a wedding or a celebration. And then it might get slower and more mellow. And those just bring up associations for people, like you mentioned, nature or parties or dancing, or just the sky is the limit, depending on the person's experience.
All right, we've got to step aside for a quick recess, but we'll be back right after this.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
When you perform music therapy on someone, I know you mentioned kind of at the beginning of this podcast about how there's a visual aspect to it as well. Mm-hmm. I think about movies and, you know, when you listen to a movie score, it could be a really intense moment visually on the screen. But if there's, you know, kind of upbeat music, it becomes almost comical. And you can really influence the way someone thinks about what they're seeing with music. So
absolutely.
Does that translate at all in the line of work that you do?
Mm. Well, you know, I don't do a lot of work with visuals in my job, in my career, you know, my career. I'm in private practice. So like I said, I work with care partners and people living with dementia. And so we are addressing a different kind of different goals than you might, you know, you would address with different, a different population. But absolutely. We use everything accessible to us. It really just depends on the person and their, like I said, their experience and their need.
Mm-hmm. What benefit does music therapy have for patients opposed to other types of therapy? I mean, mm-hmm. What's the psychology behind the way music affects the brain?
So one of the benefits of music therapy is that music is sub-language level. So you don't need to have language to access it and to enjoy it and to benefit from it. So if you're working with somebody who is no longer verbal and can't process verbally what they're feeling and experiencing, music might bring back some facial affect where you can kind of read what they're thinking and feeling. I can't read what they're thinking, but maybe what they're feeling.
You're not a psychic?
You know? No, no.
That's a different podcast.
Yeah, right. Don't invite me back for that one. Yes, you might be able to read from their body language, their experience. So as I mentioned, I was at the strumming workshop over the weekend, and just the physical act of participating in a musical activity, especially with something as accessible as drumming, with a hand drum, you don't have to be the drummer for, Def Leppard, to benefit from drumming. So just the physical expression can get around some of the limitations of words, if that makes sense. And even in talk therapy, let's say you are working with somebody who's experiencing depression. One thing that happens with depression is a flat affect. Things aren't enjoyable anymore in some cases. And so you don't really have a lot of facial expression, or you may feel tired and withdrawn, and that's reflected in your face. But perhaps music will be accessible in a different way, a subcognitive way, feelings, emotions that might be able to get somebody out of that position where they can't think of anything positive because they're very flat and sad and depressed. But music might bring back some positive associations and memories that would at least give the person something to talk about or experience their emotions in a different way through music.
Okay, so you're saying that because if they hear something, they might have a positive association to it from the past, and then that will help them maybe describe how they're feeling if they don't know how to otherwise do so.
I think so. I think it awakens, there's a music soothes. Oh, I shouldn't have even started that saying, because I don't know if it's the savage beast or the savage breast. People say it in a different way, but I'll say beast. So music soothes the savage beast. It soothes it. It makes you feel, like we mentioned before, comfortable. Mm-hmm. And also, I think because it's comforting, it can be comforting.
Does music therapy, if you're talking about maybe a patient who, dementia, that's an unfortunate thing that is, mm-hmm. impacts you for once you have it, it impacts you for the rest of your life. But something that maybe could be fixed, if you had a stroke and you're learning how to speak again or something like that, or you're learning how to walk after a traumatic experience, is music therapy something that can help long term? I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this. Is it something that just makes you feel better in the moment sitting across from you talking to you and listening to the music? Or when you leave the office, is it something that kind of does heal you as you move forward?
Well, I mentioned the research in Parkinson's disease and rhythmic auditory stimulation, gait training. Their research has showed, you walk with a rhythmic stimulus for 3 weeks and the carryover goes for 6 weeks after that. So in something like Parkinson's disease, it is degenerative. So you're not going to get better. You might stave it off and you might be able to ameliorate some of the symptoms, but it's not going to get better. But in the case of like a brain injury or a stroke, yes, the effects of music will last. In fact, I don't know, years ago, Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, when she was shot, lost a lot of her speech, lost a lot of her life. And was treated by a music therapist at Tier Memorial Hermann Hospital in Houston. And music therapy, she accredited it and her team with gaining back some of her speech. Because language is more limited in where it's accessed in the brain, and because music is global, it can get to those areas. It can bypass a damaged area and improve the speech center, connect neural connections for speech in a different area close by. And so, it really can last. And, if you're working with lots of music therapists work with children and you're working on social skills, emotional awareness, self-regulation, and those things do get better in most cases. It just depends on the person and the diagnosis.
I was going to ask you about that with kids, too, because, again, you have the opportunity to really shape how a child's brain develops. And so if a child has, let's say, behavioral issues and they don't know how to understand their emotions, and maybe they're lashing out because they have this feeling inside that they don't know how to express. Mm-hmm. Is that where someone like you or a music therapist can come in and deal with it in that way?
Absolutely. What came to mind when you were describing that scenario is a drum. Because some of that are a problem when you can't regulate your emotions and when things are overstimulating, you might get very excitable, very agitated, very angry. I mean, kids do throw things sometimes if they're at that state. And if you have something musical, an instrument like a drum where you can even play as loud as you can on that drum, this is going back to what we kind of talked about, meeting somebody where they are. So say you have a student, I would say student because school age student who is not able to regulate their emotions, but they practice that on the drum when they're getting upset. They play very, very loud and very, very fast, very, very animated. They may have a scowl on their face. It's a socially acceptable way to get off that emotion. Mm. And so as a music therapist, what you would do is you would meet them right there. You wouldn't be like, oh, calm down, because nobody calms down when you say that. that's not a therapeutic technique anyway, to tell someone to calm down. But then you might join them very, very loud and very, very fast and a scowl on your face. And then gradually you might slow down and you might quiet down and you might relax your face and they may follow you. And so the hope is that the next time they're upset, or maybe not the next time, but in the future when they get upset, they can kind of relate to that, resonate with that feeling of being very hyper and loud and very hyperactive movements. And maybe the hope is that they will be able to then calm themselves better because they've practiced it on a musical instrument where no one's getting hurt. That would be a good example, I think, of emotional regulation.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad because that made me understand it a lot better. So tell me if I'm wrong, and I might butcher this, but with music therapy, when I asked about the long-term effects of music mm-hmm. therapy, the goal is while you're in a session with someone like you, you teach them how to, and I know that you work specifically with dementia patients, but you know, whatever it is, let's say it's depression and you're working with someone with on depression, you're creating these positive associations with certain types of music and that feeling that patient can maybe then go out in the real world. And anytime they do feel depressed, they can revisit that time where they were able to create a happy emotion with music mm-hmm. and draw on that and associate with that in the real world. Is that how you have more long-terming effects?
That would absolutely be one way. And the other way is that music really does just reshape your brain. Because it is so whole brain activity. It really does change your synapses.
Will you go deeper into that? How does it actually reshape your brain?
Right. So that is a question that one of my colleagues in NMT, neurologic music therapy, who is up on their training, I've had the training, but it's been decades, would be able to answer that more clearly. You should have another segment on music therapy. So music changes the brain. Well, if you think about, let's think about how when we're anxious, we think of other anxious things. And if we're anxious all the time and we don't come back down, our brain is just used to being at that level of excitement, that level of anxiety. If you can learn how to bring that level down with music, and you do that as often as you can, I'm a firm believer of carry through. You know, you can spend 45 minutes with me, and then if I teach you some things that you can keep accessing at home, then you'll have more chances for your brain to change. You change the synapses, because when you learn something new, that's what's happening. And in the case of dementia, you know, those synapses begin to die as the brain deteriorates. But the brain still is plastic. It still has plasticity. It can still change. So with enough exposure to a stimulus, in some cases, I can't, you know, certainly not. You certainly can't, you know, reverse the dementia process. Or you wouldn't, let's say if somebody is missing an area of their brain because of an accident, it wouldn't regrow that area. But other areas of the brain would take over some of those functions. Mm. And that's called plasticity. And music is a great way to access that plasticity in the brain.
Right, right. It's super intriguing because, again, people look for calmness, tranquility, a way to deal with depression, anxiety in so many different ways. And it's really wonderful to know that they can access that and a better feeling through music. So I guess my last question for you, Amy, is are there any new practices or developments in music therapy that you're particularly excited about?
That's a great question. There are lots of, you know, the arts in healthcare right now is just exploding as a field. And there's a lot of new research about how important the arts are in general for our brain health, for our physical health, for our emotional health. So there's a lot of new research that's coming out of that right now. There's, I should have brushed up on all of the agencies, but the National Institutes of Aging, and let's see, the National Endowment for the Arts, and some other organizations have been coming together for some new research inspiration. Music therapists are involved in that as well. Because of the clinical aspect of my practice, I'm not involved in that research. I think I would like to be, but I kind of want to do everything and I can't. So there's some great new research coming out there. And I just think because people are really, you know, music therapists, but also music perception, you know, doctors, neurologists, you know, there's a neurologists who are focusing in music perception. When we find more about the ways that typically developing human brains process music, we'll have some new innovations about how a brain under trauma or stress or, you know, or illness or injury could respond before. So it's once we know more about how brain, how one's healthy brain in general responds to music, that'll give us a clearer picture about how a diseased brain might benefit differently from music in new ways.
Wow. So much excitement coming up in this industry. And I'm excited to keep following along. And Amy, you've been absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on. Hopefully all your kids got home okay from school. And again, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And you're doing such great work with your patients with dementia as well. So, you know, God bless you for what you
do. Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been fun.
All right, if you miss anything from class, these are my office hours, and here are some top takeaways about music therapy. Number one, music therapy has really been around for decades, and it has ties to World War II. Back in the day, when they were trying to heal World War II veterans, they found that music actually helped the veterans heal faster. So that was kind of the beginning of music therapy. Number two, one of the benefits of music therapy is that music happens at a sub-language level. That basically means that it doesn't require language or verbal communication in order to engage in it. Now, while a participant might not be able to express how they feel through words, they can use things like body language and emotions during sessions to signal how the music might be affecting them. And number three, while music therapy might not be able to completely cure something like Parkinson's or dementia, it can be used to help taper some of the symptoms, which obviously can go a long way with these patients who are dealing with such hard things on a day-to-day basis. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast on music therapy. For more podcasts, you can go to foxnewspodcast.com. And don't forget to subscribe to this one on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen, and leave us a review. This has been Getting Schooled with Abby Hornacek on the Fox News Podcast Network. Class dismissed. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.